and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm AD Packham and we're going Route 1 in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well, last week I asked, could we make it 2 wins in a week against Chelsea? And the answer is a resolute yes, after 2 goals from Yankuba Minte and a goal of the season contender from Kari Mitoma carried us to a comfortable 3-0 victory. This weekend, we head to rock-bottom Southampton. As you well know, games against teams languishing at the foot of the table have been somewhat of an Achilles heel for the Albion. So let's hope it's a case of the Saints licking their wounds on Saturday rather than Dr. Brighton. We'll see you now. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wears, and we are delighted to welcome back Jason Thackeray. And a little bit later on, we'll also hear from an Albion legend who was back in town this week. Welcome back, Thackers. Lovely to see you. You had a lovely weekend, didn't you?
Oh, the weekend was fantastic. I just had the best possible start, really. And was in a very good mood there.
Well, yeah, did it leave you in a romantic mood on Valentine's Day?
Maybe not.
You don't associate the Albion with romance, believe me.
Well, I don't know. The way that Jason was talking about...
Do I want to know this?
About, like, Carew's first touch.
Oh, right.
There is an element of romance about that, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, can we keep our power of drive for that? Because I get the feeling. But I mean, we could probably do 3 shows on that alone, couldn't we?
Probably. Yeah. But I mean, Jake, it was a really weird game because obviously the scoreline suggests it was comfortable, and it was really comfortable. And there's absolutely no drama. I mean, I think I said to you on the concourse on Friday night, myself and Andy Bass, we arrived at Brighton Station probably about 7:15, which is a little bit later than we would normally get there. And normally you'd expect the queue to be going out the gate. We just walk straight onto a train. There's no queues. There's no nothing. Normally, particularly when you're playing against a team from London, it's normally rammed. And then that whole no drama concept carried on for the rest of the night.
Yeah, it was very no drama. I had a slightly different route to the ground, so we went up a couple of my old mates from the Goldstone drinking the Swan every now and again. So we went up there for some of their cheesy chips and a burger and a pint, and then had a nice leisurely stroll to the ground. Were not abused by any homophobic Chelsea fans because there were hardly any around. Walked straight into the West Upper, had a pint, saw you. Watched a nice relaxing game of football, went home, had a scotch, went to bed. It's great.
Ba-ra-pa-pum-pum. You say it was drama free. Let's face it, when you're watching the Albion, it's not. Let's put it this way, it's not stress free because it's easy to say in hindsight just how sort of stress free, how drama free it was. But let's put it this way, it's because the Albion were brilliant. I mean, for all the fact that all the pundits on mainstream football will tell you Chelsea were poor. Again, we did a number on them. You're right about sort of it was an odd thing, AD, because I think the possession stats said that we had only about 30%, which for the Albion is unusual. We normally boss them. But in this instance, and I think probably something that needed to happen after the Forest win, because let's face it, it was the next Premier League game after that Forest defeat, whereby certain things, I wouldn't say they're any different. Certain things do go out the window for the FA Cup. Things are slightly different. You know, maybe there's a little bit more experimentation, I don't know. But this was the next Premier League game after that 7-0 thrashing. And it's almost like Hertzler was trying to prove a point to the players. The players are trying to prove a point to themselves that they can defend. And ironically, from the worst defensive display for a long, long time, we've probably gone to one of the best defensive displays for a long time because Chelsea had 70% of the ball and did rock all with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's been famously said in the stats after the game, Jay, that Chelsea had no shots on target throughout the whole game. But, I mean, they did have the ball in the net, to be fair, which always seems a bit of a weird
anomalies. And we said there'd been no shots on target, yet they had the ball in the back of the net. I mean, it's the same with Liverpool.
The foul comes first, doesn't it?
I was just going to say the pedant in me, but the other pedant already spoke. I mean, technically, the ball was dead, so they didn't have a shot on target.
The other pedant was me.
Okay, but I mean, there was one change to the side that beat Chelsea, strangely enough. I said last week that I wasn't going to weigh in on the Chelsea laugh-a-thon last week because there's a certain thing called Schadenfreude. I can actually do that this week because I'm not playing again this season. But there was one change to the side that beat Chelsea last week, which was Adam Webster coming in for the injured Lewis Dunk. Now, Webster has had a bit of a journey with the Albion, and it's like normally we've said it on the show many, many times, it normally takes him a game or two to get back up to speed. But he's been absolutely brilliant the last few weeks.
Yeah, he has. He's come in and done really well. And I think he allowed us to adopt some defensive tactics that I noticed, certainly from the West Upper when we were out of possession, whereby Minty would drop into right back, who was playing almost as a right wing back throughout the game. Which allowed Joel Veltman to tuck inside a little bit, and then one of the two centre backs in possession would go and press and follow their midfield. And Webster did it time and again, and he would put their pivots under pressure or their midfield under pressure. But that wasn't the only thing. The other thing he was doing, he was a regular centre back because the tactics were quite fluid, and he had a superb game, I thought, and he has been really good when he's come in. And we are in a little bit of an awkward position as a club now, where we think what really, you know, if Eagle was fit, what is our best centre back combination? Not necessarily who are our best centre backs, but Van Heck starts every game for me if he's fit. But who do you play with him?
There is a school of thought that we are better without Dunk in the team at the moment.
Yeah. And I posed that question on North Stand Chat and people thought it was very negative, but it really wasn't. I wanted to pose it after a win rather than after a loss, because the point for me wasn't that Dunk had done anything wrong. The point for me was that Webster had been really good coming in, and we allowed us to play a tactical shape that completely negated Chelsea.
I think the argument there in that case is all right, Dunk's, I say he's lost his place, because when he's fit, he will get it back again, because one, Hertzler has said he's going to do that, and two, the cachet that in this country that we place on the notion of captaincy. Yes, we know that Webster therefore has done nothing to have his place dropped, but there is evidently a hierarchy. There is a preferred set of partnerships, and I think that probably the first one, when they're all fit, is Dunk and Van Hacker. Now, whether Dunk is slowing up, being careless, making mistakes, losing his Zimmer frame, who knows? It's no mistake that thankfully Webster's got stuck in. And I think that the whole argument of who should be playing is actually a nice problem that Fabian Hertzl has got, because of the three regular ones we know are fit, because then after that you're sort of, okay, who's next? We've got, you know, Cashin, who hasn't played yet. We're comfortable with any of those three combinations from those three players of Van Hacker, Webster and Dunk. I think anyone is perfectly all right with them. At a pinch, I think Veltman could probably play centre back. Although I think he still sort of enjoys, I don't know, upsetting left wingers, really.
I mean, at the end of the day, Jason, the manager's job, right, is to put the best players available on the pitch to win a game. And sometimes that will be horses for courses, won't it?
Yeah, it will. It'll be horses for courses and players for tactics, right? And I think probably he was forced into having to play Webster by Dunk's injury. But I think, you know, whether that forced the tactics or the tactics were the tactics anyway, and Webster was just good at them, either way, we executed that game plan perfectly. But we will certainly have to... I think I've seen Hertzler be a lot more pragmatic in the two Chelsea games than obviously the Forest game. I think he's done that at certain other times earlier in the season. He's not he's not as rigid tactically as De Zerbi, so he will probably pick players to suit how he wants to play in a particular game.
Well, it's not even just that. I mean, your point is absolutely correct, but it's also the fact that he himself is evidently on a massive learning curve. Because, well, I mean, look at what happened up at Chelsea. We played a kamikaze line. We lost 4-2. It could have been 7-5. It could have been 9-8. Who knows? But as he pointed out, it didn't work. And then he obviously with Forest, he's not doing that again.
No.
And it's he has no choice at the moment to, if he wants to do something, he wants to try something, he has no choice but to do it in a live game. It's far from ideal. But if it's the case that the club have said, okay, this is a season of transition, and the high probability that we're not going down, then we might not have seen the last of one of his bizarre experiments. Even if just to say it doesn't work. Because, like I say, if he's going to try something, then he can only do it in live games.
I mean, I don't necessarily. I mean, I know exactly where you're coming from, Al, and the likelihood is exactly what will happen. But I don't always buy the fact that the captain always has to start. I mean, basically, at the end of the day, we were talking to a certain gentleman last night. More about that later.
No,
But
I was just going to say, Herzl himself has said, if he's fit, he
Oh yeah,
plays.
I know. This is just my opinion. But at the end of the
Yeah,
day, the chap who we were speaking to last night, who may well be as the same, he may be a compatriot of half our team. He said that his former manager at the time said, "This is my best 11. If you want to get in the 11, make sure you're better than them." And it was, if Adam Webster wants to be in in this 11, make yourself undroppable. Make it so you can't.
Well, this is my point about he hasn't done anything to deserve losing his place, as and
Exactly.
when Dunk gets fit again.
Yes.
And also, there's one the other thing I'd say about Webster and the way he's playing at the moment is, for all the worries and fears that people have about him being a dropsy, being careless, whatever it might be, ever since he returned and came onto the field against Arsenal a few weeks ago, I don't think he's hardly put a foot wrong. And this is the Adam Webster we know, who, all right, maybe tongue in cheek, I'm not sure, but a couple of years ago was talked about as fringe of England. I think it's probably we've gone through the rest of the central defenders. Right, let's
Well,
go to Adam Webster.
the England manager was in the crowd at the weekend.
Yeah, he was
I'm
almost
quite in.
certainly looking at someone else, believe me. But no, it's it's the Adam Webster that we know can play. Not the dropsy, not the careless one, not the one who will slice it into row Z, not the one that basically give West Ham their game. And I'm all for it. It's brilliant. He's playing superbly. I hope that comment doesn't sort of give it any sort of Jonahism about it. But having said that, we now know, AD, that we don't do the whole Jonah thing, because I do remember last week's show, you said about, and let's move on to one of our other defenders, Joel Veltman. Trying to knock seven bells out of Crystal Tipps. You're saying, oh, let's not doing it because, it's all going to come back and bite us on the bum. No, it was Mark Cucurella's backside that was bitten again.
Yeah, it was
Not as
interesting.
badly.
His blood was twisted all night. It was like, I mean, we'll talk about the goals in a minute, but I mean, Nkuma Minta had him on toast. It was just like it was just like a blur of hair.
Well, there is that, but actually, in that case, Jace, with what AD's saying there, with Minté having Cucurella on toast, does that say to you more about Cucurella, who himself is obviously a decent defender? Does it say about Minté's improvement?
Oh, it says about Minté's improvement, but it does, to me, speak a little bit to the fact that we just seem to be able to unsettle Cucurella by booing him, and he'll just have a natural nightmare just because we're going boo, boo. It's just so pathetic.
We
But
are so puerile.
I couldn't join in with that last week. I was very much enjoying it this week.
yeah, I don't mean the booing's pathetic. I mean Cucurella is pathetic. I mean, we're going to boo him every single time because he just goes to bits. He seems to be made of tissue. But I thought Minty was absolutely fantastic. I thought, there are a lot of other left backs, left wing backs who would have had a nightmare with him because he covered the whole of the right flank, both halves. At one point, he was playing right back. The next thing, he's popping up in the penalty area, finishing chances. The next thing, he's interlinking with Jorginho or sprinting past one of their players, Cucurella or not. He was just absolutely magnificent.
Yeah, I mean there was talk amongst various people about maybe like how do you get the best out of him and like can it really end up being a wing back, and to do that you've got to have to play three at the back to do so. So maybe that's how we get Webster, Dunk, and JP in the team. But
I think it's always dangerous to have all three on the pitch at the
I
same
know
time, isn't it?
we've got cash in the attic now as well, so it's
Yeah, I
like.
know, but. This is the point. I think that it's happened many times. Like for instance, when we've seen Tarik Lamptey go bombing down the wing, we think, well, we've got another right back. Let's see if we can put him ahead of him. And then you realise that the say if you're going to play on the right midfield or play on the right wing, it is a different set of protocols and standards that you have to play to. And sometimes they seem lost. They're happier in a starting position of right back and going down the wing rather than starting in an advanced position, and sometimes losing their way and losing their, getting a little bit lost over on where. And I've seen it several times where, and that's what worries me. That yes, Minteh in theory, due to him going forward and going back, could be a decent wing back. But seeing as we haven't seen it, and I don't know whether therefore they've tried it at Lancing. If it's going to work, and this is what I was talking about with Hertzler and his experiments, is that something we're going to see, and then we come horribly unstuck against it, or something you realise is actually brilliant?
Yeah.
And
Time
I
is
mean, it's
up.
a rhetorical question, but.
I think I'm not sure we may well see three at the back with two wing backs at some point, but that really wasn't what we were doing on Friday night. We had different formations in and out of possession, which is more difficult, and we pulled it off flawlessly.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
Okay.
like I say, our
Well,
off the ball work on again in that second game against Chelsea, I think was is the best I've seen probably since, I don't know, I can't think of another one. When we're sort of, up against it where the previous game, all right, they got a lot of confidence from beating Chelsea in the cup. Great. And it's not as though Chelsea put out a second team. But, after a 7-0 drubbing, something, they had to concentrate. They owed it. It wasn't even owing it to the fans. Those players owed it to themselves not to put in such a performance.
yeah.
And it showed. They were very, very professional. They were tight. They were rigid. They were tenacious. And even then, Hertzler's saying, "No, I still want more out of you." Great. Let's have more.
Well, I think we were talking about it last week, actually, when we were saying about we're watching the Albion Unlocked thing, and when they had the
Oh
footage.
yes,
They had
Van
the
Hecke
footage
fellowing in
from
the
the
changing room,
dressing
yeah.
room, and Van Hecke being really angry and basically saying, "Like, come on, boys, come on, let's train like we play. Let's put this behind us. Come on, we can do it. We can do this. Let's win. Let's win. Let's win." And
I think
I think.
it's something that Hertzler's also said. He actually said, "Play like we train." So clearly, they're training well, high intensity, and just then, well, as we saw against Forest, just not putting that out on the pitch.
Yeah.
But in
Oh
both of
yeah.
the Chelsea games, the intensity was so much higher.
Okay. Well, we mentioned the England manager was in attendance on Friday night, but so was the Dutch manager, and we got a lot of Dutch players in our team. One of which is our goalkeeper, the Dutch number one. I've been pretty critical of him over the last few weeks. I think that he gets away with a lot of stuff that if that was Jason Steele in goal, he wouldn't have got away with. But and obviously a big mistake in the FA Cup game. But he's bounced back from it. He's bounced back very, very well. And now this is the bit we can start purring, Jay. He's got an assist to his name.
He has got an assist, and he's probably got assist of the season just because of the way it was taken down. I mean, yeah, absolutely. And he matched Steele for that. If you remember against Brentford a couple of seasons ago under De Zerbi, Steele got an assist again, passing to Mitoma, where he took it on the bounce this time and did the bouncy lob over to equalise. So, well, I know Steele's injured, so he's not in the realm of playing at the moment, but essentially the first choice goalkeepers over the last couple of seasons now have a Premier League assist each to their name, which is incredible.
Yeah,
We don't really play Route One, right? We do it
that
very,
is.
very rarely.
I mean, me and Andy both said at the time, "Oh, gone Route One."
But the thing is, as Jason said, it's a kind of goal, and it's a kind of thing we've tried before. Sometimes overhit, sometimes the defender's got it. Like I say, sort of. I think we scored again. I think it was against Brentford in the summer tour of the US. Did exactly the same.
Yeah,
Just
we
belted
did.
it down the
You're
middle,
right.
and yeah. But the other thing I'd say about it is obviously people are talking about the precision that you need to get that pass there. Is the control, but as much as a lot of pundits are saying, never seen that before. We have week in, week out, just not with that final result, Jase.
I mean, we've possibly not seen it quite that good, or possibly we've just not noticed it. I don't know, but
I don't know. I
He's
don't know. I mean,
controlled it and then gone bombing down the wing.
I mean, we actually said this a few weeks ago about Carew, and basically the fact that his form would have been fluctuating a little bit this season, and basically his first touch is just one of the I don't think I've ever seen an Albion player. I don't think I've ever seen a player with as good a first touch as his. And it was kind of like his radar was a little bit off at some points during this season. But we see him bringing the ball out of the sky like that all the time. It's just that this time he had the speed of thought to actually leave the defender on his backside,
Jace,
leave the back of the net.
you talk us through it, mate.
I mean, okay, so just to that point, there's only one other player that I've seen live who's got that kind of touch, and I hate to agree with Jamie Carragher, but I often don't, but he said that was Messi-esque, and it was. I've seen Messi play for Barcelona with Iniesta, with Xavi, and he was killing balls like that for fun all the time, but we know that Mitoma does it. But I mean the goal, the ball, you can see the runs on, and I wasn't thinking at the time in real, how is he going to kill that? I was just thinking, well, this would be nice if we get something out of it with a long ball, and then the next thing he's killed it, turned, brilliant finish as well. And do you know what my instant reaction was?
Go
It
on.
was Sanchez would have saved it.
no. I said this out loud to my son. I said, "Oh, good, he was onside," and that's the. That's the effect that VAR's had on the game, I'm
Oh dear.
afraid. And then we just kept watching it back. We watched it back on the big screen, and then we watched it back at the bars, and then we were on our phones watching it on the way home. And it just got better and better and better every time you watched it. And I
Yeah.
was thinking, there's going to come a time where I watch that, and he's going to completely miss it, or he's going to side foot it into the stand.
That's the bit when you wake up, Jace.
But no, he kills it even more softly every time you watch it.
All right.
Is it?
Well, people are calling it goal of the season. Some people are calling it the best goal they've ever seen. In the lexicon of goals, how do you rate it?
It's right up there with Brighton goals. It's probably that Enciso against Manchester City, the Jahanbakhsh overhead kick against the same opponents, Chelsea. Probably those are the three best goals for technique that I've seen in different ways. I mean, people, when they play that Enciso goal, never show the 64 passes that we put around City before he unleashed the thunderbolt, right? But we did. Any
So
goal with an
three of the
overhead is a
best
world
goals you're
equally.
talking about you've ever seen us score in recent years. Are you
At
talking
the
about Enciso at Stamford Bridge as well? So that's three goals against Chelsea. That's good, isn't it?
I was talking about Enciso against Man City, but you've just reminded me that three of our best ever goals have come against Chelsea, and yes, that is brilliant.
So it's not about the fact that we work hard for them. It's just we have fun scoring when we score against them. And, you know,
And
go on.
I wonder what Willie Irvine's saying about this right now, but you know.
Who knows? But no, I mean, like I
I
say,
was one in 1972, so I'm not counting that one.
yes.
We're very lucky to have that goal by Willie Irvine live and well and living on YouTube. It's like
Absolutely, yeah.
the fact
No,
that it
but
was a rarity in those days that the TV cameras were actually at a game. Yes, kids, they never used to be at every game. The only time we knew it was going to be televised is when you walked up to the goal scene and you could see the great big turret
The scaffolding
of
tower,
the
wasn't it?
yeah
Yeah. Oh, for reasons that we're going to come on to later, Ian Hart's been on North Stand chat reminiscing about a goal that wasn't captured on camera at the Goldstone that I saw and I was right in line with standing in the southeast corner,
Frank
which
Worthington.
was Frank Worthington against Wimbledon. 30-yard thunder, what's it, straight in off the underside of the bar. Incredible. That was the first game I went to without adult supervision, which is probably why I've got this terrible Albionitis disease now.
Actually, you're saying, AD, about how rare it was the cameras were there at the Goldstone in those days. It was
Yeah.
actually the first time Match of the Day ever turned up. Frankie Howard, who was the, no, not that one, Frankie Howard, who was the groundsman, admitted later he painted the pitch green, parts of the pitch green, because, just to make it look better on telly than it actually did.
That happens a lot these days. I mean, I don't know if you're. I mean, there was a game at Wembley last, like, I think it was a women's international, and they painted the pitch green, and the girls all came off looking like they just auditioned for the Hulk. It was ridiculous.
Should we get back to Matoma? Because we really should. I mean,
I like
the other
Danny
thing about
Welbeck's
it is.
reaction here. Danny Welbeck's reaction after he went up to him and fortunately, the microphones at the side of the pitch picked it up, and he was like, wow.
What I like about Mitoma's reaction, I mean, he's clearly happy to score, and he'll do the slide. They all do the sliding knee drop, and you can tell how much the pitch has been watered by the distance they go. Some of them do crash and burn onto the floor, but he's it, because of his the natural expression that nothing fazes him. If he commits a foul, no facial expression. If he scores a goal, very little facial expression. But of course, the teammates are absolutely cock-a-hoop. And the other thing about that, when Welbeck's going well, is a little bit where Mitoma then just sort of bends down. He I don't know, he's pulling up his socks or he's doing something. And I think it's Welbeck. He just belts him on the back as if he's his favourite husky. But it
I
gave
thought
us.
exactly the same thing. I thought I was watching it. I was obviously, I know this might come as some surprise. I write this show, I actually write this thing. And like, I was watching it, and like, he patted him really hard, like he
He
was
did.
being a naughty dog.
No, it was good boy, Cowrie. Well done. But yeah, it's. I mean, the finish itself, and I'm glad we haven't mentioned it, but I do want to just make sure that we cop it out. I am not going to criticise the goalkeeper in any way. The mere fact he got a fingertip to it says to me how good it was because it was that far in the corner. It didn't go over his hand. It didn't go under his hand. It just went past his fingertips. That's because it was that well placed. You have to bear in mind that Mitoma was still 25 yards out when he shot the, when he took the shot. And it was a pass into the bottom corner, but a pass that was that good, that low, that accurate, and very difficult for a keeper to get to. So anyone that says just because he got near to it, because he got the merest of fingertip scrapes to it, says he should have saved it. Now, it doesn't work like that. The fact he got as close as he did was meant he did pretty well. No, it was everything about it was positive for Mitoma and nothing to do with Chelsea. I'm not going to criticise Chalobah for not heading away. It was all about us.
Chalobah looked as surprised as Danny Welbeck
Yeah,
did.
it
Quite.
was sublime. But I asked Jason about where it came in the lexicon of goals. Where does it stand for you?
Well, it's up there. I mean, the finish was lovely, but it is all about the control. It is all about the build-up.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Nelson's goal at Brentford. Yeah, he belted it into the top corner. We've seen them before, but it's all about the preparation for it, having beaten 600 defenders.
A jumbo jet, a couple of phone boxes.
That kind of thing. So
Yeah.
as the finish, as the slot goes into the goal, it's a great goal. It's all about the build-up, and the build-up is him prepping himself for a, having received a pass. I don't know. Am I going to make a list of top 10 goals? Probably not, but it is one of those you can just watch again and again. Like, as Jason said, like in Cissé's against City, like in Cissé's against Chelsea. I think Solly March against Southampton, you can watch that again and again.
And yet I come back to Yuri Skalak. Who know? Who
And
knew?
yeah, Youri Scal, absolutely forgot about him.
I mean,
Yeah.
that is. I mean, it's weird. I mean, I absolutely love this goal. It was a tremendous goal, and yes, of course, it is right up there. But we all like different types of goals, right? And then, I mean, I prefer a thunder. What's it? And I'm still. I did another show this week, and we were talking about goals. And I said one of the best goals I nearly saw was that of Vicente's against Derby, because if that had gone in,
Yeah.
and rather and let's face it, the crossbar is still rattling. It
Or
is.
you've even got McAllister's disallow goal against Leicester.
Oh, you see that one as well.
That
That's
really
my
should
favorite
count.
kind of goal.
Yeah.
This was all about the. I mean, the touch. I mean, I love. I was watching it back from the various different angles. I just love the fact that how far back Carew's head goes when he's looking up at it coming out of the sky. I mean, if I look that far back, I would be falling over. I'm not gonna. There's
It's
no doubting it.
like the ball was radio controlled to land on, like
Yeah.
Camaro's foot. I mean, so how mad did you go, Jace? Or was it because of the fact it was only the first goal in the first half you thought, well, that was very nice?
No, we went quite mad, to be fair. We really
They
did.
go mad, we go mad.
The second and third goals, whilst not being, quite as good in inverted commas, we obviously went even more mad because we knew that we were going to beat Chelsea, but we did go pretty mad for that one because why wouldn't you?
You are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you in association with Flowers Unlimited. Where can you find Flowers Unlimited, Alan?
You can find flowers, and they're not limited to anything. You can have as many as you want, as long as they've got them in stock. It's 175177 Portland Road. I love in Hove. I love the fact that our American guests came on, and we're able to recite this verbatim. I mean, it's a bit like your intro, isn't it? Yeah, you're listening to the album. Yes, but it's a great sponsor. Thank you very much to Dave Costa for doing that, for all your floral needs. Just a reminder that at the end of next month, it's Mothering Sunday. So do pop over there for all the things you might want to please your mother with. But yes, all your flowers, all your gifts, cards, what else do they do there, Rady? They do.
They do booze. They do chocolate. They do. I don't think they do stockings. But they do many,
Stockings for
many, many things.
lady? No.
Yeah, it's no. It is. It's a wonderful, wonderful place. And it's florists who are not just flowers these days. They do a whole gamut of things.
They
And
do. Hang on,
also.
and don't forget, as an Albion season ticket holder, when you either do it on the phone or online or in person, just mention that you are an Albion season ticket holder, and you will get 20% off. Just tell them we sent you.
So Alan, you know what else does a whole gamut of things, don't you?
I would say a Dalek.
No, Radio Reverb. Radio Reverb is 18 years old this month. Amazing.
Actually, can
It's
you just do that? Actually, can you come out of that? It's not actually this month. Can you
this
just
next
say,
month, isn't it?
can you just say we'll
Yeah.
soon be
Amazing.
celebrating?
Radio Reverb is 18 in March. That's next month. Amazingly, this show has been going for 18 years. Incredible. And to celebrate, we're having another Reverbathon. Al, when is the Reverbathon?
The Reverbathon will take place over the weekend of the 12th and 13th of April. We're at home to Leicester that weekend, so there'll be a lot of people about. We'll be doing our show on the 12th of April, probably about midday, live. It's been all, I know we did a live one last year, but it is good to do a live show,
Yeah.
live from the open market. So come in and make faces at the window if you wish to do so. We'll be on air at midday. Blow raspberries at the window. Moon if you really feel like you have to, but that's your problem. It will still be a little bit nippy there. We are
Al,
raising
please,
funds.
please, please don't encourage people to, just because your back wall is back, Al had his back to the window. I'm the only person would see if anyone was actually moving at the window. Please do not do that.
Okay.
It will
Well,
bounce.
if you do,
You'll
just
see
make
the
sure.
reflection in my head.
Well, it does. Yeah, it is quite a reflection. Well, if you are going to wear some nice underpants instead. No, don't moon at the open market. It's not nice. But yeah, we will be there. So do come along and say hello, preferably with your face. But we're raising
And your
funds
cash.
and your
That's what
cash.
we
We're raising
really want.
funds for Radio Reverb, which is a community radio station. We don't accept advertising. We only accept grants, donations, and sponsorships. So if you do feel like chucking a few quid our way, you can either do so via the Reverbathon, in which case you'll get a shout out and a whole bunch of loveliness from us. Or if you can want to do it anonymously, and you can do it anytime, just go to radioreverb.com/donate and chuck us the few quid that we need to keep the radio station going, for the community. We broadcast across the city and probably across most of the Sussex coast as well. but just don't tell Ofcom that. We believe that we are offering a service. I mean, there's obviously our show, but we have a whole range of spoken word and music shows there that cover just about every aspect of modern living in Brighton. So
that's right. We have shows for every taste of music, for every choice of different language shows, different.
Thankfully, they don't do any minimalist music shows. I'm quite grateful for that.
It's only a matter of time, Al.
Okay,
moving swiftly on. We'll give you more information on that as time progresses. But also, our good friend Brett Mendoza, here, the landlord of the Caxton Pub in Brighton, he is putting on a charity football match in aid of the Rocking Horse Appeal, which is a brilliant, brilliant local charity. It's going to be at on the 22nd of March at Worthing's Woodside Road. It's going to be a game of Albion legends put together by Guy Butters against a celebrity team. I mean, apparently Brett Mendoza is a celebrity these days because
he's going to play for both sides, isn't he?
Is he?
If he's a celeb and an Albion man, you know.
Well, this is true. But, I mean, the Albion team's looking fantastic. There's Mark the Cartwright, there's good. Guy Butters, there's Kerry Mayo, Gary Hart.
We've got Stuart Tuck, Stuart Mile. We've got Tommy Fraser. We'll have Guy Butters. We're basically talking Dad's Army here, aren't we?
I mean, Jake Robinson, if his train's on time.
Jake Robinson. There is that. And Joe Wilkinson, who's put together the celeb side, he's actually got a fair amount of... Well, basically, if you watch 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown, or if you watch Would I Lie to You, then a lot of people from there are going to be playing in that. How good they are at football is another matter.
Yeah, apparently John Richardson is going to be wearing a cardigan on the pitch.
You know, right, yeah. Yeah. No, it sounds like it's going to be a good hoot down. So get yourself down to Woodside Road on the 22nd of March.
So all tickets are £12 for adults and tickets are available on the Rocking Horse website. So just go along there. Now, anyway, speaking about the Caxton, you and I popped down there last night and we were greeted by a former Albion legend, an Albion legend who just happened to be on this show last year, actually. And
we're not talking about you here, are we?
No, we're not talking about me, but it was Hans Cray, and here's what he had to say.
Here in the Caxton Arms on a cold February night with the Cliff Richard of Dutch football here, Hans Cray, doesn't look a day older than when he played for the Albion. Admittedly, he looked 66 then. Hans.
I hold on to your first remark.
Okay, fair enough. That's close enough. Hans, welcome back to Brighton. I mean, first and foremost... I know it's been, sorry to say this, 40 years, but what are your memories of playing for Brighton?
The last 3 days that I've been here in Brighton, I really realised that I made the biggest mistake of my life, that after 1.5 year football at Brighton, Chris Catlin offered me a new two-year contract, and I didn't sign, and I went back to Holland. It's the biggest mistake.
Do you remember why you didn't sign?
Frank Worthington told me, Hans, we both had a great season and we both need £30,000 as a signing on fee. And if they don't think we deserve it, we leave. Well, he came in at 9 o'clock with Chris Catlin and said, no signing on fee. And then I had a big mouth and said, I need a signing on fee as well. And had a great offer from Holland, from RKC Waalwijk. And it's the biggest mistake. The last 3 days that I've been here, I have a regret feeling.
40 years is a long time to hang on to that regret, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's coming back really, really, really fast now.
So now you've been here back in Brighton, and obviously the club is a different beast now to what it was then. And as someone who's obviously working for Dutch television and gives his opinion on European football, what do you make of Brighton and how have Albion been in the 2020s?
They've become a really, really serious contender of the really big clubs like Manchester City, Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal. And I'm very proud to see that... The new stadium is totally full and the people are excited and they're blossoming. And I'm also happy that there are many Dutch players. Bart Verbrugge, I like him very much. I do the analysis of our Dutch
even though we conceded
team.
7 the other day.
Yeah, Nottingham Forest, I know. But I'm such a fan of Bart Verbrugge, even though I did think that the Zerbi took too much risk with him in the build-up, in your own penalty box. I thought sometimes it was ridiculous, but our Dutch national team coach, Ronald Koeman, has told him, Bart, you are my type of goalkeeper, with the crosses, with your reflections, but you, if you want to stay in the Dutch national team, take less risk. Doesn't matter what your coach says, the Zerbi says, of the German coach.
Hertzler.
I don't care what I say. You do what I want. If you take less risk in the build-up for the next 10, 12 years, you're my man.
So given that Ronald Koeman was actually at the Brighton against Chelsea game, he must have been delighted the fact that his number one goalkeeper got an assist.
He had an assist as well, huh? Yeah. But he was very impressed with Jean-Paul Van Hecke.
Yes.
He's my type. Jean-Paul Van Hecke is my type. He plays the ball forward. He plays the ball in between the lines. He plays the ball very hard.
There's a little bit of a similarity there, I see. It's like between you and Jean-Paul. Both blonde central defenders for Brighton.
You don't talk any nonsense.
Like both look like Bond villains.
If you compare me with Jean-Paul Van Hecke, then I'm very, very pleased with you, and I think you know a lot about football.
Far.
You go far.
If only I could be as good-looking as you, Hans.
Oh, this is it.
Okay, but there's a lot of Dutch players in our squad. Some that we've lost over the years, some that were still here. We were chatting to you earlier, and you really, really like Mats FIFA.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Mats FIFA, and many of your listeners will probably think, what is he saying, Mats FIFA? Mats FIFA is the missing link of Feyenoord, his former club, this year. They miss him incredibly. Every top Dutch English midfielder must have a fantastic first touch. His first touch is fantastic. And sorry for the Brighton supporters that I haven't seen him very, very much starting the game, 4 or 5 games only. He's been injured. But when he's fit, he's going to help you. And everyone, you and the Brighton squad will say, this time, Crazy Hans is right.
So we're going through the Dutch contingent here. We've mentioned Verbruggen, we've mentioned Van Hecke, who incidentally is my favourite player. But we have to talk about the man of the dark arts, who's becoming a bit of a cult hero now at Brighton. We signed him for I think it was a couple of bags of peanuts and a tracksuit.
Joel Veldman.
From Ajax. One, how is he considered back home? And two, what's your take on what is it now, 5 years here?
Something like that, yeah.
I just spoke to him about
Yeah, we missed him, thanks.
Yeah,
thanks for the invite.
We just missed him.
We did.
By 10 minutes. I'm here for my documentary.
Yep.
I'm very proud to get my own documentary at ESPN Holland. And that's why I definitely wanted to come back here. But one player who is as steady can be is Joel Veldman. I'm such a big fan of Joel Veldman. He doesn't have a big mouth. He doesn't want to prove himself with crazy things in a pub or in anything. He's now for the fifth year, I think, at Brighton. And he just said to me, Hans, I'm so happy here. I really realize that you regret leaving this great club and this great city. He said, but I still have bad feelings. What do you mean, still have bad feelings about Brighton? He said, no. I said, I played half my life at Ajax, and they were very negative about me the last season. And that has hurt him. It hurt me. How can anyone not be a favorite of Joel Veldman? Mm. If he's got the ball, you know he plays the ball 99% to the same colour. Joel Veldman should stay another 5 years at Brighton.
Can you see him finishing his career here?
He just said to me, there are Ajax has told me that they're interested for the new season in him, but he's got another year. I think he's got an option.
Yeah.
And he just said to me, I would really like to finish my career here, and that would be the best thing. What a great man, what a great player, and what a class on the pitch and class off the pitch.
He sounds like two different characters, doesn't he, off the pitch and on the pitch. On the pitch, he's a lunatic.
Sometimes he can irritate people. You're right. I have to correct myself. He can be very irritating for the left wingers.
He sounds familiar, doesn't it, AD? Mr. Cray next to us here.
But he's one of my favourites.
Yeah, I'm not interested unless he's wearing oven gloves and rescuing seagulls out of the
sea. That's right.
Listen, we've been through the Dutch contingent now, and there is one fella left we haven't talked about. Now, he is Dutch, although he qualifies for Turkey. Give us your lowdown on Kadıoğlu.
Kadıoğlu used to be a right winger.
Yeah.
Do you know that?
Yeah. It shows, because I think his right wing play is better than his fullback play.
Yeah, but he's a good fullback.
I
think it's more of a wing back, really.
He is the best if you play with three central defenders, and he can do what he wants, and he can run, and he can get to the back line. Then he's at his best.
Okay, listen, we're coming to the end of this. It's brilliant to see you again after 40 years. I mean, there's so many people of our generation who remember the pogoing, remember the vulgar person's hands is evil. But let's ask you, what does Brighton and Hove Albion mean to you?
I've had the best football time of my life here in Brighton, and that's why...
Your whole playing career was here.
Yeah, my best career was here, and I'm so unbelievably stupid. I regret so much that after 2 years at Brighton, Chris Kaplan offered me another 2-year contract, and that I signed a 5-year contract for a Dutch club again. It was the biggest mistake of my life. After a month, when the season had started in Holland, Chris Kaplan phoned me again. Hans, you still can come back. And he was right. Fantastic man, Chris Kaplan. I love him so much. One of the best managers I've ever had. And I should have listened to him and should have come back. And in those 3 days, last 3 days, I really realized that some regrets do hurt.
You've carried them a long time, haven't you?
Yeah.
Hans Cray, thanks, mate.
Thank you very much.
Jace, you remember Hans Cray. What are your memories of him?
He was evil, and he had a song that said he was evil. And I thought he played a lot more games than he did. I mean, apparently he only played 23 games for us. I had him down as playing at least an entire season. And he was playing in that game with the goal that we just talked about earlier in the litany of great Albion goals when Worthington scored against Wimbledon off the underside of the bar. He was playing in that game. I just remember, I was a teenager, but I just remember somebody who you didn't want to get on the wrong side.
Yeah.
He always seemed to either win the ball or take the player or both.
I think Chris Kelly did encourage him to do so. But I think the other thing people remember about him was the whole Zebedee thing. Did you join in?
No.
His knees had gone by that point as well.
I joined in with Hands Is Evil, though. That was one of my first favourite football songs. We adapted it for Doug Rugby 3 seasons later.
Yeah,
have to relearn the words.
Yeah, but did take a long time to learn.
I mean, it just goes to show, really, because you don't. I said at the time, and I said when we did the interview with him last year as well. You don't have to play 500 games to be a legend. I mean, the word legend literally means a story that's handed down from generation to generation. You know, there's a lot of players in our team now. Are we going to be talking about them in 40 years' time? I mean, people who are watching Kuru Mitoma, they might be talking about him, maybe. I mean, I talk about Steve Penny. Al talked about everybody.
Well, this is the point. I mean, I think probably if you're talking about 40 years' time, obviously we don't know where we're going to be in 40 years' time. Well, the club, we don't know where the club's going to be. But you have to bear in mind that right here, right now, we're at the highest ever peak position sustained that we've ever been. And so, therefore, there will be players who sometimes you think, well, you know, we've talked about Pascal Gross being as obviously one of the greatest ever players we've had. And you tend to sort of consider them in that regard once they've gone rather than while they're here. So it is often something that's looked at in hindsight. But I think it's also one of those things, Jace, where it doesn't hurt, even when we lose 7-0, to remind ourselves that we are actually still at the highest peak we've ever been at, and we've probably still got the best players we've ever had.
Yeah, we have. And it never that level of self-reflection never does any harm. And I can't say that those were my first thoughts, because I was up at Forest and on the train home, and I certainly wasn't enjoying the train ride home very much. So I can't say that sort of rational level of where we've come from came to me at that moment. But it should do from time to time, because if you're talking about legends, you're really talking about the evolution of the club. And, you know, comparatively, okay, we're talking about Mitoma as a legendary player now, or maybe someone like Dunk, but are we going to have somebody who goes and scores a cup-winning goal, a trophy-winning goal, you know, getting us into a European final goal, something like that? That would instantly bestow legendary status.
Can I just say, I love the way you say that, as if it's going to happen so casually.
So is. But exactly that, though, Jay, because, I mean, when we... A legend is a story. It's a story that's handed down to generations. People talk about Gordon Smith's miss. They don't talk about the fact that he scored. They don't talk about Gary Stevens' goal in the cup final. People talk about his miss. And that is a legendary tale that's handed down from generation to generation. It was as a song that was sung on the terraces. Hans Kray's song got regenerated as... for Doug Ruby. I mean, all the songs get regenerated, right? I mean, it still really annoys me that, like, 80 years of popular music culture and everyone can only sing exactly the same songs and rehash them.
To be fair, that Hans is Evil is a Russian folk song. This is the Volga Boat Person's song.
But it wasn't just his, let's face it. It's been sung at every ground.
I know what you mean. So, I mean, with what AD's saying here, Jace, do you think that... the concept of a legend needs to be reconsidered, or is it the fact that we really shouldn't care and we just appreciate who we've got?
I think we appreciate everyone that we've got in the team at the moment, but I do tend to agree with AD's definition of it, really. It's that story. So if you say legend, I don't think it comes down to necessarily the number of games you played or what division you played in. It's you say a name and everybody who is a follower of that club knows why you've said that name and what they're famous for. So you mentioned Gary Hart earlier. If you say the words Gary Hart, anyone who's our age is going to tell you exactly what they loved about Harty.
Posh Spice.
Yeah.
Well, there's that. But even probably one of the worst ever players that played for us, Robbie Rynow, is a legendary moment.
Yes. Yeah. I absolutely.
In that sense, AD, you're quite correct. It's the stories that we all have going forward to tell, you know, and whether that's on field or off field, you know, Dick Knight is a legend on account of the fact he saved the club, that kind of thing. And I suppose that you could actually therefore fabricate any given person to be, quote, a legend. But then I think you might even have to put in hierarchy the nature of the stories in question. But Robbie Rynow did probably score the single most important goal that, you know, any Brighton player has ever scored. So, yeah, he deserves to be on that kind of high plinth.
Stora. I was just going to say exactly that. The week before that, Stora, that iconic commentary is played before every single game we play at the Amex.
It's what like a great, you know, piece the story of Jimmy, the story of Jimmy Case being sent off at Leicester because he's deaf. I mean, that's a legendary story. But yeah. In every sense of the word, Jimmy Case is an Albion legend. And we were actually talking about him with Hans Kray last night, actually, because he played with Jimmy. And
absolutely. No, I mean, we're just going to say that the reason we were having a natter with Hans was he's doing a documentary. It's actually something about himself for ESPN Holland. And they just wanted some people to talk to who'd seen him play and remember the stories. But also, they because he, as you pointed out, Jace, he only played 23 times for Brighton. And as he said in that interview, he said it's the single biggest mistake he made in his football career, deciding not to stay with Brighton and instead going back to the Netherlands. Even though Chris Catlin told him many, many times he could stay, even once he signed a contract to go back to the Netherlands, he still said it's not too late, you can come here. And he actually has 40 years of regret. Obviously, now his playing career is over and has been for a long, long time. He still regrets that moment. That's the story that's being told in the documentary about him. And there was myself, and AD, and there was Dan Tester and there's Ian Hart. And we're just having a good natter around the table at Brett's wonderful pub, the Caxton. And that apparently comes out sometime in May. And I think that we will be able to get to see it in this country. Another thing, AD, we've seen in this country is Yakuba Minte scoring twice against Chelsea.
Yes, we did. And it was mostly down to Danny Welbeck, actually, Jace.
It was two assists from him, wasn't it?
Yeah, two assists. Yeah, absolutely. Although the work that Jorginho put in at the start of the move for Minte's first and our second should not be disregarded. That's a massive pre-assist as far as I'm concerned.
I'm actually, for Colwell's... If you want to talk about a pre-assist, I'm giving that to Levi Colwell, who very nearly scored his first Albion goal.
Yeah, he very nearly did, didn't he?
Oh, was it him with the near...
Yes.
Because Chelsea are good at scoring own goals at the Amex as well, aren't they? Yeah. Chalabar did, and the other one, the other one.
But I think what I liked about
Loftus-Cheek,
yeah. What I liked about both of Minty's goals is I think what I've seen of him a lot this season is a tendency to not be that calm with the final ball or the finish, to sometimes get that wrong, to sometimes have the wrong decision making. Those were two very calm and clinical finishes, so he's clearly been working on that thing.
Even though Cucurella tried to take his ankles and lobbing them into the bin.
Yeah, and missed.
Yeah, that's what happens when you're not cool enough.
He turned Cucurella twice on both of those goals, and it's just like, you know, I mean, we all know, I mean, the booing aside, we all know that Cucurella is a very, very decent player. Obviously,
he was fantastic for Spain in the Euros last year, wasn't he?
Yeah, and so we know that he is a decent player, and I think you're right, Joe. I think the booing does get to him, and I think he cuts a very, very sad figure.
Well, one wonders the extent. I mean, given what we see at the Albion and the camaraderie we see, and I love the behind scenes footage we get to see, especially even in the dressing room. That's kind of an interesting thing. That's quite intrusive, quite invasive, and yet we get to see it. But you see the camaraderie, and I don't think it's put there for our purposes. Those players are too hyped up, either after a win or after a defeat. They're too emotionally involved. They haven't hit the emotional handbrake yet. So you see them coming off and they're high-fiving each other and they're applauding each other. And one wonders whether Chelsea have that same camaraderie, so that if one of our, for instance, if it was our players being booed, there would be another Brighton player that would actually go and put their arm around them and say, they've got the problem, not us. You know, it's that kind of thing. I didn't see a Chelsea player go to Cucurella and say, he shouldn't have to because he's a professional. It's the slings and the outrageous slings and arrows of misfortune that you have to put up with as a professional. But no one did go to Cucurella and say, don't worry about it, mate. And I think that cut a lonely figure then.
Yeah, not public, they didn't. You don't know what goes on in the dressing room. But I take your point, Al. I think that's very true, particularly when we've won. I think there were people who were just saying, have we got back togetherness after Forest? And I think probably Hertzl has spent the 2 weeks of the two Chelsea games really bringing that together and harnessing those moments where we do look good.
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned it last week, the fact that he took a match to his pre-Forest notes and said, right, that's out the window, now we move on. I think that's a masterstroke.
Yeah, yeah, it really needed to be done. It's a little bit David Brent, but in a good way.
With that is all we have time for. So, of course, thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Jason Thackeray. Thank you to Hans Cray. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM. Online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast and in association with Flowers Unlimited. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you all again next week. Cheers. Bye.